right. Welcome back to the Hall Pass podcast. This is our season 2, episode 7. If you missed any of our episodes, you can find it on iTunes or www.thehallpasspodcast.com. Again, we would love for you to send us an email of general topics and questions you might want us to cover in our podcast at
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com.
So today we're going to be discussing study habits. This is something that a lot of our students struggle with, actually, that we've worked with so far. We believe that study habits are learned traits and skills. You know, not everyone is born with the best study habits or the best ability to schedule things. In fact, it is commonly known that 90% of bad grades in high school are due to poor study habits. Counselor Jay mentioned multiple times that, grades in high school are all about your effort, and with effort comes study habits. So before we get into the specifics about study habits, I want to cover a couple of things first. I've done a lot of research and kind of helped my students, as well as when I was teaching elementary school, about studying. And one of the things that I truly, truly believe is how you approach studying matters. If you're going into studying being like, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing ever, and you're very negative, that's going to affect how you study. So aim to think positively when you study. Remind yourself of your skills, your strengths, your abilities. And that's a really great way to kind of approach study habits. You want to avoid catastrophic thinking. Instead of thinking, I'm a mess, I'm never going to have enough time to do this, or thinking, again, a lot of students get stressed out and they think very negatively when they're approaching studying. But you want to be positive. You want to make it seem like, okay, maybe I'm not going to get as much as I want to get, but I'm going to try my best and I'm going to study as hard as I can. And you want to avoid absolute thinking. So instead of thinking like, I always mess things up, or, I didn't do so well that next time, so, I'm not going to do well this time. You want to think about ways in which you can improve and how you're going to do better this time. And lastly, students do this very often. They compare themselves to other students. Well, this student only studied for 30 minutes and got an A on a test. Avoid comparing yourself with other people, because the way you study is going to be very different from the way other people study. Like, way I study is probably very different from way Counselor Travis studies. Where you study also matters as well. So if you're studying, in a very loud place versus in a quiet room versus in a library or a coffee shop, think about where you like to study and where you focus best. So where you study matters. And then bring everything you need, nothing you don't. Students tend to get distracted very easily. If they have their cell phone, they have their laptop, they have this, they have their iPad, they have their tablet, they have this and that, and sometimes that distracts them. So when you're going to study, go for the purpose of studying, bring only what you need and leave out what you don't need. So that's just general things I want to kind of discuss in terms of study habits. But welcome back, boys, and Richard.
What's up?
Punkage is not here today, but Richard, how is Korea and how is Japan?
It was amazing. I had a lot of really good food there. I got to see my family. I got to see some of the Korean students that we work with, and so it was just a really good experience overall.
We missed you too.
I missed you guys a lot too.
All right, awesome. So let's go ahead and get started with study habits. Now, I want each of us to kind of give a little bit of insight as to how we studied when we're in high school. Not all of us were perfect valedictorian straight A students, but we found ways to study and things that worked for us. So just a couple of things that I used to do. I loved to preview and review content. So if I knew that for my AP US History class that my teacher was going to cover chapter 6, then I would preview that chapter at home the night before or over the weekend, learn about it in the classroom, and then review what I learned in the classroom as part of kind of my daily routine. And so previewing and reviewing is always really, really helpful. In terms of the courses, especially for the classes that you take that you don't really understand very well. And then scheduling tips. Everyone can fall into procrastination. It's not just me. Everyone, it's not just your friends. Like, everyone falls into procrastination, especially in high school, some more than others. But the best way to kind of keep yourself aligned is using scheduling kind of tools and resources. So the easiest one would be Google Calendar. If you have Gmail or Google Calendar, that's a good way to kind of keep yourself reminded. Obviously, there's an app on your phone that you can also use for Google Calendar, so that's really helpful. There's a new program, an app called iStudies Pro. It's spelled I and then S-T-U-D-I-E-Z Pro.
Just use an S, guys.
Maybe it was trying to say iStudy Easy Pro.
No, I don't think so.
My bad. I'm not in marketing. I don't do that.
So anyways, iStudies Pro is a great app. It looks like it helps you with scheduling. It puts your homework together, your test together, and kind of all of the assignments that you have to do together. And it's right on your phone. So that's a really good one. Wunderlist and Evernote have been around for a really long time. It's a really good way of kind of keeping yourself taking notes, but also keeping yourself organized. Or the good old planner. That's what I use. I just purchased a planner. Sometimes you're high schools or middle schools might give you your own planner. But I love writing things down. I love the physical element of checking things off and having all of that. So I just use a good old planner. I love when my planner runs out because I get to go buy my next planner. It's a simple joy in my life.
I had one of my favorite days of the year was notebook day. When I would go out and buy my notebooks for the year with my planners.
Yeah. Oh,
back to school sale when you're looking around.
Yeah. I loved those
that
days.
That was so exciting. I know what you mean because I'm like, this time I'm going to be even more organized. Yeah. So good old planners, good old folders, you know, file folders and whatever you use. And then discipline. I think you should build habits and not necessarily rely solely on motivation and make sure that you're kind of being disciplined. Sometimes people put things on their planner, but they don't follow it, or they use, you know, iStudies Pro, but they don't follow it. It's really about being disciplined and following what you write down, those small goals. And next week, we're actually going to talk about motivational tools, how to keep yourself motivated. And that's a good time for us to kind of delve into these a little bit more. But in terms of scheduling, find what works for you. But it's really important that you follow through.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree with that. I think for the most part, a lot of students rely on motivation a little bit too much. And the thing is, motivation is fleeting, right? This is something that you can't kind of rely on for the rest of your life. What is reliable is discipline and just making sure that you follow through with the things that you plan on doing. And this is the tough part, right? Why a lot of students aren't able to always kind of keep on track with the things that they're planning on doing. So just build that habit of doing it over and over again. Use your schedules, use your planners, and over time, usually after a month, it'll get easier to kind of keep on track on your assignments.
Yeah, I think that I would compare studying to sort of the same thing as exercising, right? Mm-hmm. So if you exercise one day a week for 8 hours a day, like that's not going to be healthy.
I love your analogy.
I need Punky.
So it's really applicable.
If you develop a habit to exercise 30 minutes a day, you're going to be way healthier for one, and two, you're probably going to want to do it more because that one day you're going to dread forever coming into it. And if you just develop, you know, that 30 minutes a day, an hour a day, one, it's way easier. The information that you are studying is going to be way easier to digest, mm-hmm. and you're not going to get burnt out doing it. It's a much more sustainable approach than trying to just cram everything in these massive increments.
Yep. You're never going to be able to run a marathon without practice.
Exactly.
You like that? I like that.
I like that point where you mentioned about dread, because, you know, Jenny was mentioning in the earlier part of this podcast about approaching studying in a certain way, whether that's environment or things like that. But I always like to point to my initial precepts, which are the parenting aspects. What as a parent can I do to encourage or foster this kind of thinking? And it kind of reminds me of that TED talk I heard about how you don't want to make cleaning your room a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I recognize a lot of the times, even in my own personal experience, that I always considered studying, or it was always portrayed to me as a obligation rather than something to enjoy or challenge myself by, like, go read a book. You have to read two books before you could go out to play basketball. You know, so I'm looking at it from a parent point of view at first, which is to say that maybe when you're starting at a younger age for your son or daughter is to find a way to make it enjoyable. Let's read together.
Yeah,
let's enjoy.
Make learning fun.
Make learning fun again.
I like it. We need to make a t-shirt.
Make learning fun again.
Or a hat. I think
we need a
white hat.
Yeah.
With
it. Yeah.
Make learning great again.
Make learning great again. Yeah, and you know, studying is kind of coming to a point where it's just something so dreaded these days.
Yeah.
And like parents always say, no, you can't go out with your friends until you do this. And they try to micromanage, you know, when they need to study. As soon as you get home, you better go in your room and you better finish your homework. But that might not necessarily be the way that your student studies best. And so working, just like Jay said, at a very young age to find ways in which they can make learning fun and enjoyable. I actually loved doing homework, by the way. There was a point in my life where I loved doing homework, and there was also this kind of mentality of I love studying for tests because I felt like I was like being able to show what I've learned so far. And I think that's what we need to do with studying again. You know, it doesn't have to be so, you know, let's all memorize and do this and do that, but you know, finding ways to make it more fun and engaging.
Yeah, I think that it's more just a shift in mindset from how you're looking at studying. Because if you're looking at it from a standpoint, I need to study to get a good grade, then it's almost an extrinsic motivation,
or
right?
Like but to
if you're,
learn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But if you're saying, oh, I can't wait to get into my nutrition textbook because I want to see, you know, what fruits and veggies actually do, like what
right.
the chemical reaction is
right.
because I'm really fascinated and I want to learn. I think that's way more motivating because you're excited to do it. You know, like getting an A, it's not, sure, it's exciting, but you feel like that's an obligation.
Right.
Whereas mm-hmm. learning is a fun choice that you have to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that whole mindset thing, I think, is very, very key
yeah.
here.
And I think we can definitely talk more about that in motivation, right? Like, mm-hmm. how do you motivate yourself with changing your mentality?
For sure.
So let's talk about memorization tricks. You know, unfortunately, in our education system, a lot of the things that we learn require memorization. I remember U.S. history is all about dates. Chemistry is all about...
formulas.
What is chemistry? Formulas, the periodic table, right? The
Not
chemicals and things
that.
Like that.
Well, I still haven't memorized.
I remember having to
create. I did in high school.
Yeah,
I had a test. I had to fill out a blank periodic table.
Yeah, mnemonic that device. Yeah.
Seems unnecessary.
Nah, it's doable.
Well,
what are you going to do with that
exactly.
when you're
older? But that's what the education system has come down to, right? This idea of like, let's memorize facts and test you on them. And so because memorization is inevitable, let's talk a little bit about some tricks on how to memorize.
So there's actually two tricks that I learned about in psychology. One is called the spacing effect. And essentially what this says is the longer and more consistent your breaks are between your study periods, the better your retention will be of the information that you're trying to memorize. And so this is fundamentally why cramming doesn't really work for most students, because when you're trying to just take in all this information in like an 8-hour period while taking no breaks, it's hard for you to memorize everything, right? To retain that information. So instead of cramming just in the very last day, it might be better for you to instead just within the maybe last month or 3 weeks to study in spaced out periods, right? To try to make sure you hold on to all that information. The second thing that you learn about in psychology is what's called sleep learning. And this isn't when you go to sleep and you listen to a tape.
I was about to say, where has this been all my life?
It's not when you're sleeping and you're listening to a tape of French and you wake up and you know how to speak French. That's absolutely not what sleep learning is. No, that's not what we're talking about here. Sleep learning is really just when you go to sleep after you learn. And not necessarily just sleeping, but just taking a break, letting that information soak in, because you want to prevent what's called retroactive interference, which is really just when you're studying something and then you watch a movie or you read another book, that information pushes everything out, right? It makes it harder for you to retain that information. So resting, going to sleep, just letting that information soak in can go a long way in making sure that you memorize that information.
That's
like
so interesting.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. Does the timing of your studying impact that? So like say if you have a test the next day, should studying be the last thing that you do before you go to bed? So your brain is just like, all right, let me just take
have
over while we sleep.
So again, I don't think it's absolutely necessary that you have to go to sleep right after you learn.
Right.
But if you are going to be studying for like a chemistry test, for example, you can do that right after school. Just don't go directly into another subject. And after that, spend another hour doing like SAT prep, because all of that information that you're taking in is going to start pushing out some of that information you're trying to
memorize.
So you
want to let it seep into your
right.
brain.
So for any college students that happen to be listening, so an all-nighter is kind of it hurts itself, right? Like an all-nighter, because you don't even give your brain time to absorb it.
Right? And again, like, this is different for all students. I'm sure that there are college students out there who've had to pull several all-nighters trying to make sure that they're studying for an exam that they're taking, and it might have worked for you. But this is information that has actually been studied, and they found that this has been very effective for most students.
So another reason why procrastination is not the best idea a lot of times. And in terms of the spacing effect, I actually read another thing about this where they recommend that you study, you know, the brain can only focus for 40 to 45 minutes at a time naturally. So if you study for 40 to 45 minutes and then you take a 10-minute break or 15-minute break and you make that consistent throughout the day, that's actually a lot better in terms of retention than studying for 3, 4, 5 hours. I have a lot of parents who come to me and they're like, my student can't sit still for 3 to 4 hours a day. Do they have ADHD? And I'm like, no, that's normal.
Just a kid.
They're human.
even when you're taking the SAT, they give you breaks in between.
Exactly. And that's really the reason why, because a human brain can only focus for that amount of time. And the break is absolutely necessary. I always tell students to take breaks when they're studying, that they're not going to get anywhere from just studying 3 to 4 hours straight, that they should study for 40 to 45 minutes, put an alarm on their phone or something for 10 to 15 minutes, get up, let your blood flow through your brain, flow throughout your body, go get a snack, something, you know, like an apple that's going to wake you up, and then come back and study after those 10, 15 minutes. And that's going to really help kind of rejuvenate your energy for the next study time period, the next 40, 45 minutes of focusing.
That's actually a really good tip. There's one very unconventional tip that I got when I was taking my SAT, and I think it helped me tremendously, which was when you do take a break, get your blood flowing. Yeah. Don't just, I saw a lot of students that during breaks that I give when I'm teaching lessons, they just sit there and they twiddle their thumbs. No, get your legs moving, go out. I know it sounds weird, go do some jumping jacks. Maybe people look at you like you're funny or something, but hey, you're beating them in this game, because we're talking not about culture here, this is pure biology.
Absolutely.
We have to overcome our biological deficiencies as well as harness our biological strengths. I think what Counselor Vincent's pointing to, or these psychological studies of spacing effect and sleep learning, to me, I have a very simple rule about human, I guess, learning habits, which is we are creatures of habit. The point of spacing things out is to create a habitual understanding, and it's through creating a habit that you learn to memorize better, or that you are memorizing for that fact. I think that this is something most parents don't give too much attention to, and we need to start. I've seen a lot of students that have bad nutrition, and they have bad sleeping habits, and they have a tremendous effect on your ability to study. So the wellness of mind is also the wellness of the body. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to pay attention to that some more too as parents.
I love that. And then the memorization tricks, I just want to talk about one thing, and maybe we can all kind of talk about something that we did to help memorize. But one of the things that I did, which might sound a little bit odd, but I basically wrote note cards. I use note cards a lot, and I physically taped all of my note cards onto my mirror in my bathroom. And that way I was like hiding my face, like hiding my reflection. And then the only way that I can see my reflection is if I memorized the note cards, and then I was able to pull those note cards off of the mirror. And that way I was able to see my reflection. I did that because
that's intense.
As a girl, you know, like in high school, you know, I want to make sure that I look good when I go to high school. And,
same.
You know, not having a mirror was something that was kind of detrimental to my social life. And so it forced me to memorize these in an effective way, and that way I can see myself in the mirror. So that was one of the things that I did for my classes.
So we need a mirror.
That's
we need no cards.
Okay, check. I was like you though, Jen. I was a note card king. It would take me so long to write down the note cards, but that was part of the memorizing process. When I write down stuff, it's in hand, not on the computer, it sticks for whatever reason. And because I can sort of, I'm more of like a kinesthetic learner and studier, so when I actually go through the motions of writing it down, that's sort of how I kind of
memorized.
Remembered it.
Yeah.
So even if I would write the note cards down, it would take forever, and then I would throw them away and do it again. Mm-hmm. And then I would allow myself to actually quiz myself on the note cards. And that was the easiest thing for me.
That's
and
that,
great.
That brings us to repetition, right? That's the rehearsal aspect of this. It's the most common way to study and to memorize things, to go through it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's no substitute for that, mm-hmm. right? If you want to study for SAT words or if you're trying to memorize formulas, you have to look at it over and over again. Mm-hmm. This is where building the habit comes in. You want to make sure that you have the time, you're putting in the time necessary to memorize all this information. So you have to go through these habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't just pray to the GPA gods and just hope that you could YOLO.
There's no osmosis here. Yeah. You can't just put a book to your head and hope that everything
soaks
in.
There's no shortcut to this. And I hear so many oftentimes that a student will come like, but my friend, he's so smart. All he has to do is just look at a book and then he can get an A. I'm like, so many times these kinds, what do you call them, urban legends, yeah. these myths almost.
Don't compare yourself to other
people. Don't compare yourself to others is one point. I'd say compare them in a certain way, but don't take those outliers to then indicate, oh, I'm just not capable or I could do the same.
Right.
Bread and butter, 90% of us, you know, we've got to put in the due diligence. We got to put in the effort.
What I've found too is that, and sorry to cut you off, Jay, is that a lot of times, especially in high school, is that people think it's cool to do well while claiming they never studied.
Yes.
Right? Which 99% of the time is a total lie.
Well, yeah. And also, right? Why is studying such a bad thing? Why is that not cool? Studying is fun. It could be exciting.
I know. Like, I love learning.
Yeah.
And I'm 26 years old, and it's like one of my favorite things to do. I love learning.
Yeah.
Like, studying is cool.
Studying is great, and there's, you know, I didn't study at all for that test, and I got an A.
Like, that's not, like, who cares?
That's, like, good for you, I guess.
About, you know? That's, like, look how lazy I am.
I agree. So there's, like, a student culture aspect to this.
I think that's kind of something that's more of a cultural thing in high school that you sort of get over in college as you grow up and realize that going about life in the laziest way possible isn't something to brag about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Richard mentioned memorization and repetition. And another way that I used to do this is on him. Like, you know, he's my younger brother. And so I would make him quiz me, or I would make him do, you know, whatever, or I would teach him stuff. You know, people always say when you teach, you learn twice, right? So when you learn a concept from school and then you go home and teach it to your younger sibling or older sibling, that's a really great way to kind of get this repetition. And if you're an only child, use dolls.
Or your dog.
Or your friends.
Or,
right.
Or your dogs or your cats. You know, it might seem weird, but sometimes, you know, you just need an audience. You just need to teach.
So you guys are talking all about, like, more of the materialistic ways of approaching study habits. I have more of a philosophy, or more of like a mindset.
Okay.
And I teach this to my SAT students. I firmly believe, by the way, I'm going to put this on the record, that you can get with the new 1600 test for the SAT or the ACT out of 36. If you were born and raised here, you don't have an English deficiency, and if you're at least into Algebra 2 or currently enrolled in Algebra 2, getting to a 1400 or getting to a 33 or 34 on the ACT equivalent is a matter of practice, and it's a matter of a certain mindset. And this is what I teach my students. I tell them one rule and one rule only, which is never make the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. It's okay to make the mistake the first time. As parents, if you're punishing your child for making a first mistake, that's honestly, in my opinion, erroneous. You shouldn't be doing that. It's when they make the second mistake and third mistake repetitively that's where the teaching concept can come into play. But as a student, understanding that we are all creatures of habit, that we are prone to making careless mistakes and whatnot, it's a matter of creating a set structure. The way I envision it is creating a troubleshooting guide. And so when you're reviewing and creating a study guide, I can see this in their student in certain ways. For example, when a student gets something wrong, they don't just focus on why the answer is right. They also focus on why the other answers are wrong. They look at it every which way. It's kind of like when I took a lot of inspiration when I was in high school studying for my SAT, mm-hmm. from when I was looking at professionals. And it was actually outside of the academia field. It was Kobe Bryant. It was who was the boxer that bit the ear off someone?
Mike Tyson,
right? Muhammad Ali. You know, there's one thing that they all do as professionals. They practice a lot. But another thing that they do is they do post-game reviews. They go back. I envision as them going to a black room where they look at old game footage frame by frame, and they go, okay, this is where he did that uppercut, and that's super lethal. Like, you want to dodge that by doing this or this. And so my question is, why can't we translate that the same way to when we study? Hey, I made this mistake on the SAT. Next time, if I see a question like this, look out for this or this. And so when you build that, you start creating a troubleshooting guide. This also answers, sorry, I'm taking a lot of time. This also answers, how do I study for a test the day before? Well, hopefully 3 weeks prior, you've been doing this rinse and repeat, and you've been creating your own list of things to look out for. Don't forget this, or memorize this, or be sure to check for this. Before you take any next test, you should be reviewing your list of mistakes you've made and what you've identified as ways to avoid making the same mistakes. So again, my ethos is never make the same mistake twice, and that is the foundation for how to study well.
That's a good one.
Nice.
That's really good. So let's talk about cheating.
The most efficient way to study. I'm kidding.
The best way to study. So let's talk about cheating. You know, cheating happens. It is something that happens in high schools. It's something that happens in college. We've all kind of heard about cheating scandals and things that have happened. As counselors, we've worked with students who have caught cheating and failed a class or, you know, something. They had to suffer the consequences of getting caught. So let's talk about cheating a little bit and why this is, you know, something that is frowned upon, obviously, not just why teachers don't like that you cheat, but, you know, what is it about cheating and what is something that we need to be aware of?
I did say that I'm just going to come off the gate and say cheating, don't even think about doing it. As parents, when was the last time you asked your son or daughter, hey, are you doing well in school, blah, 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 and then you talk to them about just the simple reminder, look, I want you to do the best you can, but just don't cross that line, just don't cheat. I don't think my parents ever said that. I think it was maybe implicit. But
it was more like get the A or I will ground you.
And do you see how that pressure can be a pressure cooker and boil to making these, albeit misjudgments, right? But from a serious point of view, there's an application process that you go into when you apply for college, Common App and UC App. If you've been caught for academic dishonesty or an academic honesty infringement or whatever term that they use, that pretty much jeopardizes your chances of getting into any school that you want to, especially in the upper tiers. I have not been successful in helping a cheating student get into an Ivy League. Mm-hmm. It's the first red flag that they don't even need to give you a second chance for. They've got too many other qualified applicants. Cheating is pervasive not only in middle school and high school, but it's also pervasive in college. And that's where it can really hurt you. So my concern about cheating is cutting it at the bud, nipping it at the bud right away and early, because if you conduct yourself by cheating or do it one way or another, you're more often than not going to potentially rely on in the future recourse. Mm-hmm. And so my concern for cheating, don't do it to begin with. I'd rather you get the F and just take ownership of your responsibility than take the risk of cheating. And as parents, I hope that you echo the same sentiments to your son or daughter.
Mm-hmm. It's just not worth it. At the end of the day, the consequences of potentially getting caught for cheating is just not worth it. Because for all the work that you might be putting in into 4 years of high school, if you do end up getting caught once and your school nowadays have zero tolerance policies, then it can really just ruin.
Game over.
You are cheating yourself by cheating.
Oh boy.
The moral high ground.
You are cheating yourself by cheating. You are losing a moment to grow and learn and experience by cheating. Why would you cheat yourself from learning and growing and challenging yourself?
It's over, Obi-Wan.
Right? Why? Just why? Ask yourself that question.
One of the things that I would say about cheating, and we were talking about this before we started recording, is that my little brother, right, in college, him and his buddies put together this elaborate cheating scheme in college, and they all got caught because they're idiots. But they put in so much effort for this cheating scheme, and like it worked for a couple days, and then they figured out.
And if you put just as much effort into studying,
exactly, I was like, well, why did you go through all this effort to do something that could get you kicked out of college when you could put in the same amount of effort or less to pass your class?
Exactly.
And he was like, oh.
Maybe.
I never thought about that. Dummy.
Let's try to give the cheating thought a benefit of the doubt, because let's be honest here. We've all been there. We've all been tempted by it, especially in high school, right? And I think let's try to get into the mindset of that, okay? My thought process when I'm approached with like a potential to cheat is most of the times, and I also see this in my students too, their excuse is that I didn't know it was cheating. I didn't think it was cheating. Sharing homework answer choices together, I didn't really think of it that way. And so that becomes also another question. I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate here because, I mean, cheating is so obviously wrong. It's not something, it's implicit. It's not something we need to express, yet we still do it. And the question is why?
I think if there is this, when students say, I didn't know it was cheating, you're lying to yourself. If there is a scent that it could be cheating, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, in some way, it can be construed as cheating. And I mean, it has a ripple effect. Something like cheating has a ripple effect for almost, I mean, probably the next decade of your life. I mean, if you get caught cheating, or in my opinion, the biggest red flag is plagiarizing, that'll keep you from getting in the college of your choice. Maybe it'll keep you from studying the major of your choice at the college of your choice, which will affect your career options. It's like the number one offense that you could do in high school. Just do your work.
Life is not about taking the shortcuts all the time. So if you are trying to cut the corners and then trying to get that A by doing something, it is potentially cheating. It's different from finding the most efficient and effective way to do something. If you're cutting corners, if you're trying to do something without, you know, if you're being lazy and you're without doing the learning yourself, you're cheating yourself.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, you're cheating yourself. So don't do it. Stay away from it. Why risk it, right?
And the last thing too, and I know we've kind of hit this into the ground here, but man, like, I mean, in high school, I think we were all tempted to do the look over the shoulder and, oh, he had A, let me do a quick erase and switch my answer.
Yeah.
I freaked out, like, morally. Like, I was like, what if I got caught? Like, the next, like, 3 days until I got my grade back, I thought I was going to get caught.
Young
and, like,
soul,
I couldn't even
dude.
Sleep.
Young
or how,
soul.
Or how do you know they're right?
Yeah, exactly. The
you
guy
know?
You're cheating on might be wrong.
Let me pose something further than this, just for our listeners here. Let's say I did get caught for cheating. What's the recourse there as a student? Let's say we're in that predicament. Do we have any advice that we could give to that student? Besides, don't do it again, obviously.
If you got caught cheating?
Yeah.
If you got caught cheating, own up to it.
Okay.
I think that's first and
I think
foremost.
That's, yeah, taking accountability, yeah. Number one.
So like a formal letter to the teacher or whatever.
A handwritten anything,
handwritten
I think,
anything.
In that situation.
Well, I'm sure
would
if you,
do the job.
Yeah, I'm sure if you got caught cheating, the first and foremost thing that's going to happen is a conversation with your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll probably go to your principal or your high school counselor, which will, they will, you know, decide what they're going to do, your repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
But own up to it. You know, I think a lot of times students get caught cheating and they're like, oh my gosh, like my mom was sick last night and I couldn't study. And they try to like create this like story for themselves. And I think at the end of the day, cheating is not the answer. If your mom was really sick and you couldn't study, you might want to go to your teacher the next morning and say, hey, you know what? My mom was really, really sick and I don't think I can take this test. That's a way better way to approach the situation than getting caught cheating.
Absolutely.
So
generally our response is don't get caught cheating. In the first place.
Don't cheat.
Don't cheat.
Yeah.
Don't cheat. Sorry. Don't get caught. I didn't mean to say it that way.
don't cheat in the first place. But if you do get caught, then own up to the situation. Tell your teacher that you apologize and figure out a way to make it up, right? Figure out a way, you know, can I make up another test? Can I create something else? Can I get extra credit? What can I do to make up for the fact that I cheated and I owned up to that situation?
I think another thing is that, you remember, sometimes I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and say sometimes students don't know that it's cheating. I know Travis wants to talk about one of the study tips next, which is to share like a Google Doc of a study guide. And I think if the general test there for yourself is to just see if we would be willing to ask your teacher, hey, is this okay if my buddy and I have this study guide?
I've literally had a student this year who the same thing happened. There were Google Docs being passed around of study guides and no one knew that. Like, I can't see how that would be construed as cheating either, right? It's just
if
students
you're collaborating.
If they're just collaborating, I don't see what's necessarily wrong with that. So I was kind of siding with the student there. But if you're worried or if you're not sure of whether or not this would be construed as cheating, then definitely go to your teacher and just like tell them,
ask.
Like, this is something I was planning on doing. Is this, you know, considered bad? Am I allowed to do this? Ask first, right? Err on the side of caution and go from there.
So let's talk about teacher relationships now that this is a really good segue. How do I use my teacher? You know, how should students use their teachers for study support?
I think the first thing is to look at your teacher not as this intimidating figure who could change your future with a grade, right? But to just see them as a resource.
Yeah.
Teachers are your biggest allies, right? Teachers are teachers because they want to teach. Make a difference in kids' lives and to teach. Yeah. They want you to learn their subject. They want you to love their subject, right? So if you have a question or you're unsure about something, like, your parents are a good resource. Your teacher's number one. Mm-hmm. Because one, I mean, your teacher's the one teaching the class for a reason, because they love to teach and they want to make a difference. And two, your teacher's also the one who's administering the test, right? They know the stuff you need to learn.
And grades you.
And grades you. So if you develop a good relationship with your teacher and use them as the resource that they are and that they were hired to be, I mean, it is their job to teach you to the best of their abilities. Make use of that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I never really did. I don't know if some high schools have office hours for teachers. I know in college they all do for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I never took advantage of that. And it was so dumb. Mm-hmm. Because I had all these questions and I would just try to ask all my friends first because I was more comfortable with it.
And they might all be wrong.
And they might all be wrong. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you just, if your teacher is available, make use of that availability. Yeah. I mean, even if you have to drop in, it's just a really simple question. That relationship in itself can pay in dividends, because say it's a class where the grading is subjective. Mm-hmm. If you're showing your teacher that you want to grow and you want to improve, they might look at your grades and seeing it, you know what, I do see the effort. That might help you out in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think teacher relationships are really important. I'm going to just play quick devil's advocate, because I know that there are students who go to schools where teachers literally shut doors and say like, nope, don't come in. You know, you said, Travis, teachers want to teach and teachers want to be there to have students grow a passion. Unfortunately, there are some teachers who do the job and they just don't.
They got that pension already.
Yep.
You know?
They got the tenure. So, you know, they might not care as much. But
right.
I still believe in the mantra of go to your teacher and ask for support. The worst that can happen is that
say no.
Exactly. Then just saying, nope, can't help you. And then at that point, you know, then you can find other resources to get the support. But for the most part, go to your teacher. First and foremost, your teacher knowing that you're struggling, I think, is an important understanding for the teacher in terms of feedback, right? Like, if I know my student is struggling so much that they're not understanding a concept, I need to change my teaching strategy a little bit so that I can make sure that the students in my classroom are learning.
Yeah. You can go ahead, Jay.
So I think more like on a detailed level, when you go to your teacher, so for example, like an English teacher, sometimes you can ask for examples of really good essays in the past. Other times you can ask by going to their office time or their lunch hours with a draft. The deadline for the essay is due on Friday, but you go in on a Wednesday and ask them to review a draft. These are things that teachers should be obligated, I'd say, to try to help their students on. Whether that happens or not, it comes down to your school. But it doesn't hurt to try. And these are the little tips that I'd like to suggest.
Yeah.
And there are definitely bad teachers, like you said. But your whole department can't be bad.
Right.
Right. If your English teacher is bad, go to English teacher number two.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you might not be doing the exact same thing, but that teacher is well-versed in whatever your teacher is teaching as well.
Sure.
So use a different teacher or a guidance counselor, or just ask anyone what other resources you could use. I mean, not every teacher, I know that it might not seem this way.
Mm-hmm.
Not every teacher in your school is a bad teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's say we used our teachers, our resources and all of that. How do we use our friends, right? How do we utilize our peers as resources as well?
So the main thing that we did, I think, as high school students was we created study groups. Now it's more pervasive than ever, especially with internet.
Yeah, Skype,
Google Docs,
sessions.
Skype, Google Hangouts. So herein lies the challenge these days, especially from a parent's point of view, because I meet so many parents who go, I don't exactly know what my son's doing when he's on the computer. He says he's doing homework, but every time I can't, it's like he's switching screens.
Friends.
He's all tabbing all the time, or he's on mic, he's on
Skype.
You know? He's got those hotkeys figured out. And to me, it's a hard balance, because number one, if you really want to study, you have to, in my opinion, be judgmental. You have to identify the friends that you synergize with that are focused with the same goal and purpose of the time that you spend and invest together to study. And at the same time, you guys have to complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. More often than not, we use study groups as an excuse to hang out, as an excuse to be with friends. And if that's your situation, then be honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I personally feel like choosing the right friends to study with is key. I also think that the environment and how you go about it is key. So maybe you want music. Maybe your friend doesn't want music. By the way, guys, listening to a certain kind of music like a dense rap or heavy metal, I personally don't feel is conducive to studying. I think that there's some very clear
You mean I can't listen to Screamo when
you
I
You can't
study.
Do that. It just, how does that help you? I just don't... You need to listen to... You know, when you go on YouTube, this is what I do. When I go to Starbucks, I got a big heavy load of like essays to edit. I go to Starbucks and I type in YouTube, chill study music. And it's like a 2 hour in repeat. And that just gets me in the zone. And the smell of coffee is what triggers my intellect. And I know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. There are certain people that I know that I won't hang out really well with when I'm studying. I'm looking for the people that are organized. I'm looking for the people that will enforce positive aspects to me, not drag me down mm-hmm. when I'm studying. Mm-hmm. So be honest about that judgment. Some friends are great friends, but not great study pals.
Mm-hmm. I hated studying with my friends, one, because I was a horrible friend to study with, and two, because all of my other friends were also horrible friends to study with, because like you said, I mean, we'd be like, oh, the basketball game's on. Do you want to come study and watch the basketball game? And it ended up just being, let's go watch the basketball game. And oh my gosh, we have a test tomorrow morning. You know, so that's why I made good use of Google Docs study guides, right? So which was... I looked at it as sort of just an online study group, right? So that's what, you know, Richard, you said that you don't see really how it's a problem because you're not doing anything different from a study group. It's just online, right? And you're cutting out that noise. And I needed to because I'm so easily distracted.
Yeah.
So I loved Google Docs study guides. I can see where they can go wrong in some cases. But because if somebody drops some information on there that's just wrong, then your whole study group is in trouble. But in my case, I always lucked out with them. I knew that I needed to be somewhere where I couldn't be distracted by other people. Mm-hmm. So I always put myself in an environment where there were people around that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I had that white noise and I had that study guide in front of me, and that was my conducive study environment.
Yeah.
So here's where I think that the line can be blurry when it comes to, you know, the cheating and Google Docs study guide. It's the whole concept of divide and conquer. Hey, you get this part of this figured out, I'll get this part of this figured out, and we'll share. That's where I start to see that it's actually, whether it's cheating ethics or not, I find it to be simply ineffective. Because when you're studying, half of the process is discovering it for yourself, not being just told and resuscitated to. But aside from that, I think if I had to give like actionable advice, number one, create an agenda, create a schedule. Meet with your friend if you're going to study with a pal and sit down at the table or sit down on the Google Doc and say, okay, what do we want to accomplish before we get up and leave today? Mm-hmm. And see if you can follow through with that. Scheduling is not only important for study groups, it's also important for individual groups, like individual studying. Mm-hmm. I think creating a schedule is paramount. You need to have a structured approach to how you want to study, especially in groups.
And find a balance. I would say don't rely too heavily on your friends or your peers when you're studying. You know, when your teachers send you homework assignments or group projects and things like that, there's a reason why it's called a group project. And there's a reason why it's called homework. Most homework is supposed to be done independently. You know, and so that's kind of where I feel like as a student, you need to balance yourself. There are elements that you can utilize to study with people. And there are times in your life where you should study by yourself. And so if you're spending 8 hours a day on Skype, it's not going to be effective. It's not going to be effective.
A lot of students will make excuses to their parents, like, no, I need to study with my friends. That's the only way that I can get a good grade. Or I have to do that. I have to be online in front of my computer. If you resort to those absolutes, then honestly, you got to really question yourself there. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone has a legitimate claim to saying that they can only get good grades if they're around people studying. I think there is going to be a requirement in your professional, young professional future, in which case you're going to have to do things on your own. What then? Mm-hmm. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make here is parents, be wary of the fact that sometimes students can make this an excuse. Students themselves, don't make this an excuse. Be honest to yourself about this.
All right, so let's move into our final advice. Let's just do a quick roundtable, final advice on study habits. Let's start with Jay.
Never make the same mistake twice. Be disciplined by creating a schedule. Exhaust your resources. I think the most important skill trait, I think that's this needs to be like a graduation requirement in high school now, is learning how to keyword search Google, okay? Because boys and girls, the world is at your fingertips. Literally with a touch of a button, you have more information than the greatest scholastic mind had 200 years ago, okay? I've seen YouTube tutorials going step by step for every single SAT practice question that's been available, the official practice test. I've seen history 5-minute chapter chunk, like note digressions on YouTube. Like, there's plenty of resources. In the end, there are no excuses for your studying behavior. Either you commit yourself or you don't. Just don't make excuses.
Travis?
I think my biggest advice would probably be two things. One would be find the method that works for you. So if you have friends that study just by reading and reading and reading, and then you try to do that and you fail 3 tests in a row, maybe that's not the way you study, right? And that would have been horrible for me because, like I've mentioned a few times on the podcast, I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn by doing. That's how I figured it out. I just figured out a way to apply whatever I was studying to an activity or something hands-on. The next thing would be just small habits are what will make you succeed in school. Don't try to do just humongous 10-hour chunks. Just half an hour a day, and you'll be stunned at what a difference that will make.
Richard.
Don't rely on shortcuts. I think for the most part, you just need to make sure that you have the discipline to, again, carry through with an agenda, to make sure that you're putting in the hard work necessary to succeed in your classes. There is no substitute for hard work. So while we've told you some of these shortcuts, some things that can potentially help you do better in school, just make sure that you are putting in the time and the effort necessary to do better in school, too.
And just kind of summarizing what everyone said, I would say discipline, determination, and resilience. Discipline, now is the time to kind of learn when to study, when to play, when to be with your friends, and having that discipline to follow through on your scheduling is very important. Determination, be determined, don't be negative, be positive. Find ways to kind of create those small and big goals and be determined to making sure that you become successful. And then resilience. There are going to be challenges in studying. You're not going to get everything. There are going to be times where you need help. There are going to be times where you need to do things beyond, just writing your notes at school, and be resilient about that. Adapt to the change, adapt to the challenges, and learn from every single element in your high school and middle school and even college career. So that about wraps up our study habits. Hopefully students and parents have learned a good amount as to how to reapproach your studying, and maybe you can use those study habits this summer if you have summer classes or you're taking SATs or ACTs. This is a really great time for you to do that. We had one question from a listener that I thought was really impactful, and maybe Jay, you can answer. Mm-hmm. A student asked, could I transfer into an accelerated program from another school?
So to be specific, could I transfer into, let's say, like a 7-year BSMD program or to like a 5-year UOP program for pharmacy, mm-hmm. or dental? Generally, the answer is no. Most accelerated programs are based upon freshman acceptance. There can be some caveats to this, of course. There's always outliers. But I'd say for maybe 95% of accelerated programs, you have to apply as a high school senior. You have to be admitted as a freshman.
Awesome. Thank you, Jay. So thank you all so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 7. Tune in next week for our Season 2, Episode 8, where we will talk about how to motivate yourself and motivational strategies. All right. See you all next time.
Bye-bye.
Ciao. Since Punky's not here.